From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Pacific Heights.
I live in Fremont.
I live in Russian Valley in the Richmond District.
I live in the Inner Sunset.
I live in the Outer Sunset.
Coming up, we'll hear about an art center that's helping people with developmental disabilities express themselves.
And if you haven't been asked that for 20 or 30 or 40 years, you have a lot to say.
Then young adults with disabilities get on-the-job training.
Yeah, I like raking. It's the best thing to do.
And a man with Down syndrome remembers opening his own restaurant.
When I see people with disabilities, they tell me, Tim, I want to be like you. It's pretty cool.
Paving the way today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. 11% of Bay Area residents live with a disability. That includes developmental disabilities like autism, cerebral palsy, and Down syndrome. Society makes accommodations for people with these conditions when they're young and in school, like mandated special needs education. But once they've aged out, life can become even more challenging. And in the U.S., history has not been kind. It was just 40 years ago that the Rehabilitation Act passed. It prohibited federal discrimination against, quote, handicapped individuals. In 1980, the U.S. made it illegal to hold people in institutions against their will. It wasn't until 1990, though, that the Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law, requiring accessibility for everybody. But there are still big challenges. The maximum government allowance for somebody with a disability is only about $700 a month. That's not enough to afford independence, especially here in the Bay Area. But there's a place in Oakland that provides not only a sense of independence, but also of community. It's called Creative Growth, and it's the oldest and largest art center for people with disabilities in the world. Tom DiMaria is the director. He joined KLW's Ben Trefney in studio to talk about what it's like to be an adult with a developmental disability.
When people have different developmental disabilities and know that there are a lot of aspects of the world that are really not designed for them, it can be very difficult and I'm sure very frustrating a lot of the time. How have you found over the years different people see how they fit into the world? I mean, I'm sure it's an individual case-by-case thing, but are there any overarching perspectives that fit that? Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. And a couple of things. If you deal with someone maybe with a developmental disability who's becoming an artist and expressing themselves, what I see and observe often is how that communication link has been silenced in that person for so many years. And I think about having your whole life story or not having language, and you have to sit with it for 30 or 40 or 50 years before you can finally speak. So that's one way that that door opens and you essentially become accommodated by the world wanting to know who you are. And then, of course, physical barriers and all those things have changed. There's also social attitudes that are still very strong. It Creative Growth, the artists work together in a community and they all support each other. And there's a great sense of privilege and freedom for them there and support and achievement. And I watch some of our artists who present that way at Creative Growth. They leave the building at the end of the day and they walk out on the street and the hoodies come up and the shoulders come up and they turn away because they know what they're going to be called on the way to the bus stop, or people are going to cross the street when they see, you know. So we still have a long way to go in terms of that stigma. So it's easier to take the curb away so the wheelchair can go down and the attitudes hopefully will start to change with that.
Have you seen attitudes changing over the years? Has there been an evolution of thought when it comes to disability?
Absolutely. The attitudes have changed. And part of that is to understand that people with disabilities are individuals and they're not other or different or alien from us. And I don't think you automatically institutionalize people who are you see as human beings. So the more that we interact, the more those barriers go down. I think in any kind of social change movement, you have to become radical and move to the extreme in terms of no barrier, fighting every fight, and then over time, you kind of come back to the center where it's a more integrated experience, where we naturally have people with disabilities in our lives, in our circle. And I don't think we're that integrated yet, but I think we've opened the doors and it's starting to change that way.
What are some examples of points or events that have helped lead to that integration or lead to that opening of thought? And when it comes to people with disabilities or who come at the world differently or are part of the world differently from, say, your typical person?
Right. Well, a lot of that's been done in Berkeley. People like Ed Roberts, who really led the fight for an accessible world. And if the structures aren't there, you know, it's kind of the hardware is there. If you don't have the hardware, you can't use the software. So those were first things. But a lot of it really comes out of the Bay Area in the 70s, at a time when the women's movement, the gay rights movement, and social change was happening. We were questioning everything about who is a part of the fabric of society. And every time a group advances themselves and pushes, you know, a more inclusive movement that way brings everybody up. So there are still folks that are, you know, lower on the ladder, but there's been significant social shifts. But the legislation to deinstitutionalize people in California, which came from a single legislator who had a son with a developmental disability, makes a difference. And the fact that you can now get in your wheelchair and get on BART starts to make a difference, because, oh, that maybe you can have a job, or maybe you don't have to have someone push you, things like that. So those things help.
That was Tom DeMaria, director of Creative Growth Art Center in Oakland. He spoke with KALW's Ben Trefney. We'll hear more of their conversation throughout today's Cross Currents. But first, let's hear about another program in the Bay Area that's helping younger people with disabilities. They usually have few options after they leave high school. In the Bay Area, nearly 60% are unemployed or don't make enough to earn a living. But in Alameda, a new program is making an effort to change that. The Alameda Adult Transition Program invites students who've received a certificate of completion from high school to learn and practice skills for work and independence. The program partners with local businesses and organizations to give students experience in industries like retail, customer service, and maintenance. One of those organizations is Children's Fairyland, a nonprofit theme park in Oakland. In a story co-produced by KALW's Jack Detch, Marcy Fraser went down to Fairyland to see how the program is working out.
Hey guys, so welcome this morning. I know it's routine and you guys might get bored doing it, but that pasture that's out there, it really needs to get raked. So
that's Jackie Salas, the chief horticulturalist at Fairyland. She's responsible for maintaining the 10-acre property. The park is closed today. The baby goats, a pony, chickens, and ducks are all wandering around on their day off. But when the park is closed, students from the Alameda Adult Transition Program get to work.
And when you guys are done with the tan bark by the picnic tables, it's going to look beautiful. Can I count on you guys to get it done? Awesome.
Yeah.
High fives.
There are about 15 students here today. They are helping to prepare the park for crowds of kids later in the week. Jackie says raking is not only necessary for the park, it serves several purposes.
The raking specifically is a great meditative task. So bringing that peaceful nature to the actual raking might actually help some of the kids, too, to be able to gain some peace in that repetitive motion.
Let's do this. Let's do this, guys. Let's do this. Yeah, I like raking. It's the best thing to do.
That's Omar Tobayan. He's one of the more gregarious students in the group. There's a wide variety of abilities and ambition among the students. A few of them aren't able to communicate verbally. But Omar, he articulates exactly what he wants.
I would love to work on a people's ranch and make money.
Omar is 20 years old. In addition to the time he spends at Fairyland, he also works at a local CVS, where he cleans up and stocks shelves. Today he's wearing a jean shirt and a Stetson.
I'm a cowboy, and I also like cowboy hats. Do you have one?
So Omar, as we know, loves Westerns and loves to be outside and working outside. So being able to work here with the animals is a great thing that maybe a job site might not offer in the community of Alameda.
That's Caitlin Rapido. She's the main teacher for the Alameda Adult Transition Program. Rapido's job is to help the students make goals for themselves in line with their abilities.
We take assessments, and then from there, we help them develop their what we call transition plan, and then we try to create their individualized program to meet their needs.
Rapido says that even figuring out how to get the 5 miles from Alameda High School to Fairyland is good practice for these young adults.
So how do I budget my money to get on the bus, or do I need to load my Clipper card? It's great that we have at least 2 to 3 options to meet the needs of the students. And it's wonderful that Fairyland has really catered to that.
And today, there's another option for the students besides raking.
So what do we do first with it? We open up a bag.
Yeah, we open the bag and we count them to 10. We get 10 sets of 50 keys. Then we just go 10, 20, 30, 40, 50.
Near the Jack and Jill Hill, so named for the nursery rhyme, another group of students is working on organizing a large bag of plastic keys, which kids use for unlocking the storybook boxes that play audio of different fairy tales and nursery rhymes. Rapido says that this task is a different kind of skill building.
When we assemble the keys, that's more fine motor skills, which many students struggle with. So it's actually great to build that. I've found that it builds strength, you know, in their hands and dexterity when they're doing typing, too.
Ben May Jr. is one of the students sorting keys. He says the program really helped him gain confidence.
I got stronger, I became happier, and I got stronger, and I keep my head up with Ms. Rapido. Like, every time I'm feeling down, and I doubt myself, but I just keep reminding myself that I can do this, I can do that, and I just have a lot of faith in myself.
And it shows. Ben is straightforward when he talks about his goals.
I want to become one of the best animators and manga artists out there, and I don't want nobody stopping me from doing that.
Whether the students aspire to be manga artists or cowboys, or even just want to master public transportation, this transition program offers them real opportunities to gain experience, self-esteem, and self-efficacy. Since its inception, over 500 students have completed the program. In the most recent class, 2 of the students have secured paying jobs. But it's not all about making money. Like everyone else, these students are just learning to be part of the community. In Oakland, I'm Marcy Fraser for Cross Currents.
That story was co-produced by KELW's Jack Detch. Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba. Today, we're talking about the ways people with developmental disabilities are living, working, and creating, which brings us back to Creative Growth in Oakland. More than 150 artists with disabilities come to Creative Growth regularly to draw, paint, and create other works of visual art. 3 of these artists have even had their work commissioned by New York's Museum of Modern Art. Now let's return to Ben Trefney's conversation with Creative Growth Director Tom DiMaria.
What is the vibe on a given day when you have it abuzz with artists?
It's phenomenal. I remember the first time I came to Creative Growth, you walk into this very large 1,200 square foot art making studio that used to be an auto garage and repair studio. And there's 100 artists all working next to each other. And sometimes it's silent and you feel this energy kind of just coming at you of creativity and people being so focused and intent. So what you'd see are sort of groups of tables and people working in areas according to media. So there'd be people painting and drawing, people working in fabric and tapestry, you know, getting their hands into clay, working in the wood shop. And so it's a big community. And, you know, an art professor visited recently and he said, you know, I work in an environment in an art school where somebody puts a line on a piece of paper and we have to talk about it for 6 months. And he said, here, people don't stop working ever and it's quiet and no one needs to talk about it. So I think that's kind of the experience you'd have. It's extremely process-based. And, you know, when you ask people to speak to you and to communicate about who they are, they do. And if you haven't been asked that for 20 or 30 or 40 years, you have a lot to say, you know. So I like to say, as a result of the process, our artists are very engaged in the process of making art. This product gets created, and then it becomes Creative Growth's job to represent the artist's product and to have their art be seen in respectable contemporary contexts. And that's with the artist's permission, and the artist benefits from that. And that's also a portal to the outside in terms of how it breaks down barriers around disability and brings in, you know, come to our openings. They're phenomenal. It's really mixed. And, you know, it's that's what I want it to be, where everyone's in it together and it all having a sort of shared experience.
Do you guys provide counseling for people as well as the artistic experience? I imagine you have teachers who are helping guide people from an artistic perspective, but then, as you call it, like the outside, once you get outside of Creative Growth's art studios, and, you know, you say the hoodie comes up and, you know, it becomes a much more lonely world, how do you work with people mm-hmm. then to help them to bring that wonderful experience they're getting from within the studios to outside?
Mm-hmm. Creative Growth has a phenomenal staff of artists. So we're not trained as therapists or art therapists. So what we do, but I say something very therapeutic happens through art making, because the people are so engaged in what they're doing. And it's amazing how you ask people not to, I don't mean behave like the people are misbehaved, but you say, act this way. You're professional. You're a leader in society. You're aesthetically evolved. You know, show me. They act. They play the part, you know. And, you know, we have family members who come. You know, we had an artist start our program a year or so ago, and 6 months in, he had work in the gallery, which was kind of quick, and he sells it. So we send the check home with him, and his father comes in the next day and says, there must be a mistake. My son cannot have earned this, you know. So there's the fight within, or the breaking down the barriers, the stigma about, you know, how people grow, what they can do. So if you become dependent on others, you become a dependent person. If you learn to go to people when you need them, you become more independent.
That was Tom DeMaria, director of Creative Growth Art Center in Oakland. We'll hear the rest of his conversation with KALW's Ben Trefney a little later. But now it's time for your stories. This is StoryCorps. Today we're sharing one about a young man with Down syndrome. His name is Tim Harris, and there's a restaurant in Albuquerque named after him. It's called Tim's Place. Tim calls it the world's friendliest restaurant. He works there 6 days a week and greets each customer at the door. Tim sat down with his father, Keith, who helped him start the business in 2010.
Tim, talk about the day the restaurant opened. What was that like for you?
It felt awesome. I wanted to own a restaurant ever since I was a kid. That was my dream.
So when somebody comes to your restaurant for the first time, when do they get to see you?
When they come for that front door. And when they see me, they'll just melt into my arms for a hug.
So what's the hard part about having Down syndrome?
In school, I remember some kids called me the R-word. I was not happy.
When you were in high school, how did you decide that you wanted to go to college?
I wanted to learn to be independent so I can become a businessman.
When your mom and I dropped you off that first day, Tim, we really didn't want to leave. Maybe around 2 o'clock, you looked at your watch and said, I think you guys better get back to Albuquerque. It's a long drive. And I still remember what it felt like to get in that car and drive away. It was one of the most scary and sad moments of my life. What was that like for you?
I pretty much like stayed in my room because I was upset missing my mom and dad. That was the saddest part. I cried in my pillow. My pillow was nothing but tears. So I decided to knock it off and make friends. It didn't take long.
Did you have parties in the dorm and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. Dance parties, too.
Nice. So when you meet families in the restaurant and other places that have babies and little kids with Down syndrome, what kind of advice do you have for those families?
I think those families have somebody very special. Families tell me, you inspire my kid. There's hope for my son or daughter. And when I see people with disabilities, they tell me, Tim, I want to be like you. It's pretty cool. Hey, Dad, can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
How does it feel having a son with a disability?
You know, Tim, when you were born, I was filled with a lot of doubts about whether I could be a good enough dad to be your dad. And many years later now, I'm so happy to have you in my life. I'm very, very proud of you and what you've become.
Dad, you are the most loving dad ever. And Mom, too. You guys are my superheroes. And having you in my life, that makes me special.
That story came to us from StoryCorps, a national project to instruct and inspire people to record each other's stories in sound. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. And now let's hear the rest of the conversation we've been hearing throughout the show. KALW's Ben Trefney talking with Tom DiMaria, director of Creative Growth Art Center in Oakland.
I feel like in going around in our daily lives in the Bay Area, I think many of us, and I can speak for myself, don't come across people with developmental disabilities all that much. I'm wondering in part why that is, first of all.
Part of the reason you don't see a lot of people with developmental disabilities out, first of all, not all developmental disabilities are visible. So you can be sitting next to somebody on the bus with a developmental disability going to work and you might not know it. And then there are some that are more visible. There's typically people with Down syndrome are visually apparent to us. So sometimes someone with a brain injury would. But there are certain issues around traveling independently and that kind of stuff that limits sometimes the way that people interact with society. But there's also a sense of there are concerns around safety and community. So people often, you know, stay a little bit closer to home. People with developmental disabilities in the Bay Area often live together in group homes. So their social life is structured through that. And there's often day programming or jobs. So there's just, there's still fewer options. So that's why it's a little bit less.
But for you, with your work, you're surrounded by people who...
Right. When I'm not around people with disabilities, it seems very odd to me.
I can imagine.
You know, I know. It's like, oh, you know, and it's like, it's, you know, and actually it's not as much fun.
How's that? Tell me about that.
Well, you know, the Creative Growth artists are so phenomenally honest and direct and committed and thankful and egoless. You know, going to art school or having taught art in a, you know, academic context, it's, you know, the ego investment in an artist can be huge. And we just don't have that at Creative Growth. And people, I think when you, you know, the old, if you have nothing, you know, to lose, you take chances and you're appreciative of what you get. And part of that is just this authentic response to the work and human nature. And also the mannerisms are different, you know. Folks on the autistic spectrum who will say, oh, I remember your second day at work here in 1991 when you wore the red shirt. You know, just I access information and history differently with folks like that. And it's actually, it's a more interesting conversation because I'm learning about how somebody's brain works and I'm not, you know, having to hear about their stock options or how they were stuck in traffic. And it's just it's a more interesting human experience for me.
That was Tom DiMaria, Director of Creative Growth. He spoke with KALW's Ben Trefney. You can learn more about Creative Growth Art Center and see slideshows of some of the work made there at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. Or drop in at the studios and see the work in person. They're at 355 24th Street in Oakland. And that's it for today's Cross Currents. Our team includes Olivia Cueva, Rachel Dornhelm, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Ted Muldoon, Judy Silber, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, Todd Whitney, and Liza Veal. Chris Hoff engineered today's show. The line producer was Audrey Dilling. Our managing producer is Julie Kane. Managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. A playwright daughter and her movie star mom team up to tell a musical story from 1960s Iran.
I felt like it was important to create the environment of Iran in 1960s for American audiences, because I felt if we just talk about it, nobody's going to believe it.
Jazz in Iran. That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents from KALW News. This music is by the Mount Diablo String Band from Walnut Creek. They're playing at the Berkeley Old Time Music Convention this Saturday at the Freight and Salvage. They go on at 2:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.